one of the most difficult questions to deal with in general, and specifically for the situation that we are in, is whether all tefillot are answered. People have been davening over these last couple weeks with an intensity that they perhaps never did their entire lives. And many people have been davening and davening and davening and haven't yet been answered. They want to know the whereabouts of their loved ones. They want to make sure that their loved ones are being kept safe. And some have been answered, but tragically, not exactly in the way that they had hoped for, where they davened for the protection and the well-being of one of their loved ones, and then they found out that they weren't coming back. And that, of course, raises significant and difficult religious questions, questions about the entire structure of tefillah and why I'm pouring my heart out to only be answered no, or to not be answered at all. So I find it fascinating that the majority of instances of tefillah in the Torah, and these are by the greatest figures in our history, are tefillot, which go an extended period of time without being answered, or perhaps are told no altogether in response, right? So we see by the Avot and the Imahot praying for children, right, as well as with Chana in Shmuel, that for years upon years, they're pouring their hearts out for a child and are not answered for sometimes decades. That's exhausting, and it could really make you lose hope. And so what exactly do we do with tefillot, or what do we do on a personal level when we feel that our tefillot are not being answered? So the Torah does have actually several precedents for tefillot which are not answered. Perhaps the most clear of these precedents is by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu begs for permission to enter into the land of Israel. There, not only is he, it's not the model by Rachel where he's davening and doesn't get an answer. There, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, not only no, I'm not going to let you in, but then God says, and stop asking, right? Meaning you need to leave this topic alone. You've asked enough, but it's not happening. Now that's even more curious, because our understanding of tefillah is that it's something that's always desired, right? Always welcome with a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And here Moshe Rabbeinu is actually told by God to stop davening for it, and that it's not going to happen, right? So using this precedent, I would like to try to understand tefillah and what we're trying to accomplish a little bit better, as well as what to do when we feel that our tefillah is not being answered in the way that we would have hoped for. So the Mefarshim respond or address this instance by Moshe in several different ways. And particularly, they pick up on the fact that here, in contrast to what we generally assume by tefillah, why is it that Moshe is asked to stop davening? So the Midrash points out that Moshe Rabbeinu is davening, and then immediately afterward, God says, okay, I want you to go up in the mountain and look out over Eretz Yisrael. Moshe's specific tefillah was to go to Eretz Yisrael to see the land. Right? And so God says, I'm not going to give you that, right? But I'll give you half, right? I'll let you see the land. And according to the Midrash, what happened was, when God said no, Moshe Rabbeinu said, what, so all this tefillah, it was for nothing? Nothing's going to come of it? At that point, God said, well, I'll let you see the land. See, it seems that Moshe's assumption is, a tefillah which is not addressed, a tefillah which didn't bring anything positive to it, even if it wasn't exactly what you were asking for. But no tefillah is ignored. No tefillah is for naught. No tefillah is a waste of time. You might not get exactly what you're asking for, but Moshe Rabbeinu's assumption is, it can't be. It can't be that you're turning me away with nothing. What was all this davening for? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to let you see Eretz Yisrael, which is at least half of what you're asking for. And some of the Mefarshim go on and say, well, the reason that at that point God said, I want you to stop asking, is because there was the concern that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave in on the part of letting Moshe Rabbeinu see the land, then Moshe Rabbeinu just would have never stopped davening, assuming that if he got that much, he could get the rest. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized, I'm going to let him see Eretz Yisrael, but that's a little bit misleading, and I don't want him to experience the heartache of davening and davening and davening, assuming he could change my mind about this other piece when it's not going to happen. And so it was a courtesy to Moshe that he said, here's what I'm giving you, but this is all I'm giving you. Alternatively, there's a more Kabbalistic approach, which suggests that Moshe Rabbeinu actually had the koach to change the reality through his tefillah. If he just would have davened a little bit more, he could have changed the decree against him going into Eretz Yisrael, which is, you know, exactly what he was hoping for. But it wasn't right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu determined that the right thing was for him not to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu had such a koach of his tefillah that he could have changed that if he davened hard enough. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe Rabbeinu, I need you to stop. Because you, if you keep davening, you're going to be allowed in, but that's not the best circumstance. I need you to realize that you control your destiny here because you can daven hard enough, but it's not right for me to let you in. You're not supposed to go in, so I need you to stop davening. I need you to recognize that this is actually the better solution, even though it's at your expense, and I need you to stop asking for it. Now, why exactly would it be better for Moshe Rabbeinu not to go into Eretz Yisrael? So there are a couple suggestions. One, perhaps, that it would interfere with the transition of power from Moshe to Yehoshua. But another idea that I saw in the Chizkuni is that Moshe Rabbeinu and his entire generation, for different reasons, but Moshe Rabbeinu along with his entire generation were decreed against entering into Eretz Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe, if I only let you in because you daven and I don't let anyone else in, what is that going to say about your leadership? What's going to be your legacy that I decreed against the entire nation, including you, right? And then you asked for permission and I let you in, but you didn't daven for anyone else. He says, that's not what you want your legacy to be, Moshe Rabbeinu. If I let you in, that's what people will say. That's what people will learn. No one was supposed to answer. Moshe asked for himself, not anyone else, and God let him. I'm not going to let that happen. So what we can see here is that even some of our most heart-wrenching tefillot, they're all being listened to. They might not be answered in the way that we want them to be answered. And maybe the answer is no, and maybe the answer is something different. But there's a lot of cheshbonot going on from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's side, where he's navigating whether or not the outcome that we are asking for is actually the best outcome. It, of course, is the outcome that we assume to be the best outcome, but there are more considerations involved. The Maharal and Rav Kook both discuss this idea at length of tefillot that are not answered. The Maharal takes the following approach. He says that when it comes to tefillah, you're not asking mitzad hadin. You're not coming before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, God, I deserve these things. Please give them to me. God, I deserve this reality. Please give it, you know, or I'm demanding it. It's not mitzad hadin. You're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something. And not everything that you ask for is going to be correct. You're not always going to ask for the right things. You're not always going to ask for something that you deserve. You're not always going to ask for something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give you. So explains the Maharal, if you daven for the wrong things, so you're not going to be answered, right? So what are the right things to daven for? Well, the right things to daven for are the things that you need in this world to accomplish your mission. So those are the things that you should be asking for. But if you daven for things that aren't necessary, if you demand things that aren't necessary, it's very possible you're going to be told no, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu just doesn't feel that that's something that you should be given. Right? So that's the Maharal's approach. Rav Kook's approach has a lot to do with what we spoke about last week, as seeing davening as a tool to impact your reality. Right? Just like we said, okay, you're hungry. Well, you have tools at your disposal to fix that. Money to buy food and appliances to cook the food, and then you yourself to feed yourself and your digestive system, and anything. You have the natural tools to fix the problem that you're experiencing, right? So tefillah is the supernatural tool to fix the problem that you're experiencing. That's your tool. But just like there are things in this world that are easy to achieve and they're easy to get, and there are things that in this world that are very hard to achieve, very hard to get, the same thing is true in the domain of tefillah, right? So some things, you know, if you if you really want an ice cream, so go buy yourself an ice cream. It's not going to be that difficult, and you have the tools to do it. If you want to be a doctor, fine, but that's going to be an extremely difficult and long process, 8 years post high school, and it's going to take a very long time and a lot of effort. It's not because you did anything wrong. It's just that's what this takes. This is the endeavor that you want. This is the level of effort that endeavor takes. Rav Kook explains the same thing is true with tefillah. It depends what you're asking for. If you're asking for something, you know, relatively simple in the, you know, in as far as God's assessment, so maybe it takes a simple tefillah. But if you're asking something that's the equivalent of being a doctor, maybe it takes 8 years. Maybe you need to daven for 8 years. Maybe it takes that level of effort. Maybe it's 3 hours a day for 8 years. Who knows? Right? But if you see tefillah as a koach that's actually in your capacity to use to impact your reality, you have to realize, though, there are things that are easier to impact and there are things that are harder to impact. Right? So don't lose hope. Right? Don't lose faith. Just some things take a long time. Some things are extremely difficult. Some things you have to expend a lot more effort than you were even anticipating in doing. But says Rav Kook, there is a procedure here. Right, it's like exercise. You know, you may have an ideal weight or an ideal physique that you're pursuing. Right, it's not to say that you didn't do anything in the first 6 months, but it might take a couple of years. Right, but every day that you do this is progress. Right, and that's the appropriate way, Rav Kook says, to see tefillah. It's progress. What you're asking for, it could take time before you expend the necessary spiritual effort in order to materialize that which you're pursuing, right? But it's a scale, and every day you're getting closer, and every day you're making an impact with your tefillahs day in and day out.